celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame has defeated Louisville 104-101 in five overtimes.
Run, Brian Stavisky! It's the ball game, and the Irish will play for another day.
But to the Notre Dame family, I can't say anything except I've been blessed.
The Penn Kingsman, 5A, state champs.
I think anytime you have a team with Skylar Diggins at the point, you better not count us out.
The Indianapolis Colts select Quentin Nelson.
Charlie Weiss's tenure as Notre Dame's football coach has come to an end.
South Bend, Washington has etched its name into Hoosier hysteria history.
Out of the 160 minor league teams, South Bend will be the best.
Brady hits. Demetrius Jackson.
Score, Marshawn! 4-2 Bruins.
Brian Kelly, the new head coach at Notre Dame.
They score! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The Clay Colonials win the state championship. They are living a dream.
Enrique Ogunbowale wins the national championship for Notre Dame.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
It's time for another installment of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, on this July 11th, 2019. Our program presented by our title sponsor, Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. By Lechleitner Doors Sales and Service. At Lechleitner, they open all the right doors. And by Eddy Street Commons at Notre Dame, hosting coffee and cars this Saturday, July 13th from 9 until 1. Eric Hansen continues vacation time, our Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. He'll be back in just a little over 2 weeks. Sean Stiers back at our WSBT studios. He'll be hosting the Leprechaun Lunch tomorrow at noon. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. I'm Darren Pritchett from Four Winds Field, where the South Bend Cubs will play game two of a three-game series against the Kane County Cougars. First pitch, 7:05, the pregame at 6:50. Kane County won 3-2 last night. South Bend 10-9 in the Midwest League's second half. As we start the program, this might be one of the oddest tweets that I have seen in some time. I don't know if it's the oddness of the tweet necessarily, it's the content. But how about this? This is from someone that's with NBC Sports Network, apparently. Okay. The NBA has announced that today's Wizards-Hawks game, which is a summer league game, will have an alternate broadcast shot exclusively with smartphone cameras. Why would you necessarily do that when you have regular cameras?
Yeah, I don't know what the benefit. And it's one thing to watch it on a smartphone, but it's another thing to use a smartphone camera to do the shooting of the video. That seems very bizarre to me. I'm not
what
sure.
What was the name of that movie, Blair Witch Project? It kind of
yeah, the little handheld.
It's going to be shot, I think, in a similar fashion. I don't know. I saw that tweet, and it caught me off guard. I'm like, well, why would you really want to do that? I'm sure we'll see it on Twitter sometime tonight.
I guess it's just maybe another way to drive people to a stream that otherwise they wouldn't have been watching just for the curiosity. I don't know.
That is a very, very valid point. All right, coming up, we're going to hear from Chris Tyree. He is one of the top Notre Dame football recruits for the 2020 class. He recently sat down with members of the South Bend Tribune. We're going to play back a portion of that interview, which leads right into Carter Carls. IndyInsider.com recruiting update. The latest on Fighting Irish football recruiting coming up with Carter at the bottom of the hour. And apparently he has a bone to pick with me. I have no idea what that's about,
that.
But we'll find out together. I'm absolutely no clue. Our My Five question of the day. Jim Bouton, the author of the controversial baseball book, Ball Four, has passed away. So we're going to ask our crew today your five favorite sports books. Doesn't have to be baseball. Also coming up, we will have Sean's America League Power Rankings. Astros and Rangers kick off the second half later tonight down in Arlington. We've got Rapid Fire. a Chicago Cubs report. Some thoughts on one of the top prospects in the Cubs system, Braylon Marquez. He has struggled recently, and we'll tell you some of his numbers coming up in just a little bit here on WSBT Radio. We start with a little baseball. I found this in the Chicago Tribune. Mark Gonzalez is one of their lead writers on the Chicago Cubs for the Chicago Tribune. He laid out five questions for the Cubs entering the second half. I'm going to use four of them. One of them really wasn't usable.
Okay.
But the Cubs are 47-43, a half a game ahead of Milwaukee for first place in the NL Central. You like, you're in first place at the break. 47-43, a tad bit disappointing. So let's go through these questions. The first one is, again, this is just involving the Chicago Cubs. Will they trade another top prospect to address a need?
I just, talking to you and hearing what the minor league organization sounds like now, who's the prospect that's going to bring something in return? It's Nico Horner sounds like a hot name maybe, but I think that they'd probably like to hold on to him. But
I think he's untouchable,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah, you would think so. So, I mean, and maybe just as importantly, who might they be able to pair on the current 25-man roster? Who might they be able to pair with that person to get something worthwhile in return? It's a team that's limping right now. They went 21-6 after the 2-7 start, but they're 22-29 since that 21-26 stretch. So they have to do something if their goal is to be a legit contender this year. But how much are they going to weigh not mortgaging the future once again? Because if they don't give up Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease a couple years ago for Jose Quintana, they've got a couple answers at the major league level right now. So it's, to me, it's kind of a conundrum. How much are they playing for this year, and how much are they weighing the future and what they don't want to give up?
Sean, Nico Horner to me is untouchable, and over the last couple of days, he's played second base and center field, normally a shortstop. So you can connect the dots with their thinking, with second base wide open and Almora not exactly tearing it up offensively in center field. So that's a guy probably not going anywhere. One of my favorites on last year's South Bend team, catcher Miguel Amaya, top 100 prospect, played in the Futures game a second consecutive year a couple of days ago, hitting .227 at Myrtle Beach. That's advanced day, with a .342 on base, 7 homers, 35 RBI. Great receiver of the baseball, very solid defensively, above his age in terms of quality in that particular category. Not sure he can get that wow guy, but can be a part of a package. And Marquez from South Bend is number 3, and we're going to talk more about him later. But he's the number 3 prospect, 20-year-old left-hander, throws upper 90s, great slider. But let me tease the last segment. His last 7 starts, Sean, 30 and a third innings, 37 hits, 27 runs, 21 earned with 20 walks and 31 strikeouts.
Mm.
And his whip for the year is 162.
Man.
So that's just kind of an idea how much some of these guys could be worth. Again, he's low A, so you're not going to make him the basis of a deal. Team is not going to take him as the main package in a deal. So it's a big question who they might be able to give up. But if the question is, will they trade another top prospect? I'm going to say no, because I just don't think there are that many. And the two that are most likely, I think Horner's staying put and Amaya might go, but I don't think he can be the centerpiece of a deal. The second question from the Chicago Tribune's Mark Gonzalez involving the Cubs entering the second half. Is this the last hurrah for manager Joe Maddon?
I mean, if things don't turn around in a big hurry, I would think that it will be. Theo Epstein has been pretty candid publicly. He's kind of fallen on the sword to some extent, admitting that he could have done a better job putting the team together. But there have also been hints that maybe it's time for a new voice in the clubhouse, and that could be coming soon. So at a minimum, like if you want to set benchmarks for what Maddon has to achieve, I would think they have to win the division, get to the NLCS, and be competitive there for Maddon to be back next year. Because, and even all that, it's still unfathomable to me that they're at this point right now, just 3 years, less than 3 years removed from a World Series, breaking the curse and the long 108-year drought and the whole thing. They've been in the playoffs for a franchise record 4 straight years. But there's a chance that Joe Maddon's going to be gone after this season.
Don't you just make a new T-shirt? Doesn't that solve all the problems?
I think that would, right?
Hey, you know what? First off, as you talk about this subject, some of the key guys on the team need to be better. And you take that's a look at Chris thing. Bryant hitting .236 with runners in scoring position. Schwarber hitting .200. They're not hitting in the clutch. They have the second most errors. They have made a ton of base running miscues. Now, can some of that be traced back to poor development in the spring? I don't know if you can necessarily say that because they've been okay in those areas in the past. Not sure why this is an issue now. But normally, a manager is the individual that takes the brunt of the lack of success. So, yeah, I would probably say it's his last hurrah. The manager gets way too much credit and way too much blame, in my opinion. Yeah. I think the Cub players, if they're playing more at their expectation level, Joe Maddon's probably not on the hot seat. But can I also say this? The fact the Cubs did not extend him going into the last year of his deal tells you that there probably wasn't necessarily harmony between front office and the manager, or they would have extended him.
Yep, I agree.
So that makes it even more likely to say, yeah, it's his last hurrah.
Yeah.
The third question from Chicago Tribune's Mark Gonzalez on five questions for the Cubs entering the second half. Can they hit in the clutch? And I just started that conversation. Again, Bryant hitting .236 with runners in scoring position, Schwarber hitting .200. That is not what you're looking for from those two, especially Bryant.
No, I mean, they obviously have to hit better. And I see Len Casper tweeting about this a lot, the Cubs TV play-by-play announcer, obviously. But could they hit better with runners in scoring position? Yes. But really, when you look at the numbers across baseball, nobody hits that well anymore. And it's stuff we've been talking about that you can tie it into the conversation with the baseball and the whole thing. It's part of the problem. Strikeouts are up. Contact rates and hit totals are down overall. And home runs are the main way that teams are scoring runs in baseball right now. And the Cubs actually rank seventh in baseball in terms of the fewest runners left on base in scoring position per game at 3.28. So, and there's only one team ahead of them that would be in the playoffs if the playoffs started today, and that's the Yankees. They have the seventh best OPS in baseball as well. So, yeah, it could be better, and obviously you'd like it to be better, but it's part of the operation of baseball right now with the contact rates and lack of overall hits that aren't home runs.
Well, you just expect Bryant to be a clutch player, despite all those numbers.
You do.
This is a former National League MVP. His OPS plus is off the chart, 144. Again, 100 is average, so he's very good there. His OPS is 955. You love that. Anything over 800 is great, so he's at 955. He's just not coming up in the key moments with the big hits. His on-base is 403, so you really like that. He's got the 17 home runs, so he's on pace for over 30 once again. Schwarber is a guy to me that he may not be with that team after the trade deadline. That just seems to be one guy, if there's any value left in him, worthy of getting something back. I mean, he strikes out one every three times right now.
Right.
His on base is only 320, so if you're going to hit 227, you better have a 350 on base, and right now it's at 320. That's at 320, so that's really not acceptable. So they've got to figure out a way to manufacture more runs.
Wait, you know,
right, go ahead.
I was just going to say, one thing with Chris Bryant that they were talking about going into the break was he really didn't like batting second, apparently, because he said there weren't enough guys on base on a regular basis for him, so they dropped him to and he said he was pressing as a result when there were guys on base, and so they dropped him to third. He hit a little bit better over the last few games, so maybe that continues. Maybe that's a more comfortable spot for him.
It's complicated being his manager, obviously.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right, the final question going into the second half for the Cubs from the Chicago Tribune's Mark Gonzalez. Can they get it right on the road, Sean? They're 18-27 away from Wrigley Field. That is a .400 winning percentage.
Yeah, and that is not good. And, I mean, I think the answer to this question is probably also going to go a long way to answering the Maddon question and whether or not he's back, because they can't be that bad on the road and hope to be a playoff team. But yeah, I went and kind of looked back at their schedule. They played their first nine games of the season on the road. They were 2-7 in that start. So even though they haven't been great on the road all season, they did win seven of their next eight road games after the 2-7 start. But then they were just not good again down the stretch going into the break, winning just three out of nine games on the road, the Reds, Pirates, and White Sox. So I think part of that still is how good is this division, really, the NL Central, where you've got to play so many of these road games. Are the Reds and the Pirates legit, or are the Cubs just that average? Because if the Cubs and Pirates are legit, you're going to continue to struggle to get some wins on the road.
when you've got good starting pitching, you have a chance to win every game, and that includes on the road. And if the starting pitching continues to be very solid, you would think at some point that's going to turn around. And you look at the last six games of the year, if the division's on the line, the last six are on the road, three at Pittsburgh and three in St. Louis. So the Cubs are in a pennant race. Those last six, it could be white-knuckle time if they continue to play the way they are on the road now as they could possibly then. All right, so that's some Chicago Cubs questions. That was courtesy of Mark Gonzalez from the Chicago Tribune. Sean and Darren with you. We have Carter Carls from the South Bend Tribune coming up in a little bit with his IndyInsider.com recruiting update. So the best way to lead into his segment is to bring back something that our South Bend Tribune friends use on a recent installment of Pot of Gold. That is a podcast they now have. You can check it out at IndyInsider.com, and they can tell you from there other places you can get the podcast, including on IndyInsider.com. But recently, Eric Hansen, Carter Carls, Tyler James spoke with 2020 Notre Dame football four-star running back recruit Chris Tyree, the electric running back, picked the Irish over schools like Alabama and Oklahoma. He's 5'9", 180. And we're going to play back a portion of the interview that's available. Again, South Bend Tribune, Pot of Gold. Go to IndyInsider.com. They've had a lot of great interviews the last few months. This was from, I believe, early June. So give a listen. This is the Tribune staff talking it up with an exciting running back from the 2020 class of the Fighting Irish, Chris Tyree.
Oh, it's a big relief for sure, just being that I can just focus on my senior season, just train with my team, just get ready for Notre Dame championship this year.
Chris, this is Carter. Notre Dame's running back coach, Lance Taylor, was hired February 12th. How much of an impact did he have on your recruitment? You know, how much did things change once he took over?
He had a really big impact. You know, he's just being that he's coached players with the same skill set as me. You know, players like Christian McCaffrey and Bryce Love, players like that, and just with them being really successful, it was a really big impact. So,
Chris, I noticed in some of the articles you mentioned Jalen Elliott as being kind of a big brother figure. How did the two of you meet, and what kind of part did he play in, you know, giving you the kind of information that would help you make your decision?
I mean, we met a long time ago. I mean, I can't even remember when it was. It was just being that I saw him, you know, be very dominant in high school. He was watching him before I even got to high school. It was a really big impact to me, just being that I had somebody to look up to. You know, just with him being at Notre Dame, you know, he didn't really sugarcoat anything because, you know, he's like my big brother. So anything I asked him, he would tell me the truth, the real truth. And, you know, that was really big to me.
Chris, Notre Dame has added ACC games to its schedule and in recent years has started to recruit in Virginia a little bit more, maybe as partly as a result. Did the fact that Notre Dame's been playing in Virginia, will play in Virginia when you're here at Notre Dame, did that play a role in your recruitment at all?
No, not really. but I mean, I knew that they had a national TV contract, so I really wasn't worried about my family watching me play or people back at home. But just being that we play in Virginia is just even better.
Chris, we've heard so much about your speed, you know, 4.38 40. We've seen it on tape. What else do you think you bring to your game as a running back?
Versatility, a game change, change in speed, a home run hitter. I mean, I can run in between the tackles too. I mean, a lot of people don't really talk about it, but that's what I grew up doing. I mean, we run the out formation here, so it's pretty hard to not run between the tackles in our formation.
Chris, I was looking at your track times online from past years in this past indoor season. Your 55-meter dash is pretty impressive, long jump, and then you've 100 and 200 and so forth. I mean, you've got a lot of state meet experience. Where are you in your track season now? How does track help you be a better football player?
One, it helps me be a better football player just because of the explosiveness and the technique. You know, I can stop and get the full speed in two steps, and I'm gone. But I give a lot of credit to Coach Price. You know, he's like a speed guru at Thomasville. So I give a big shout out to him. But I actually strained my hamstring this season, so I'm pretty much just rested for the rest of the season. Just getting ready for football season.
Chris, just to kind of rewind a little bit, when did you kind of know that Notre Dame was where you wanted to go, and what separated the Irish from the other schools that you were looking at?
Probably like a month ago. But one thing that really played a big factor was just we thought about it, sat down, and just asked, like, if football wasn't in the picture, what school would be the best fit for me? And, you know, just being at Notre Dame, is it because of the campus lifestyle, the alumni network systems? I mean, just the academic prestige itself. I mean, that pretty much set it off.
Yeah, you have the official visit at Notre Dame planned June 21st. What kind of are all your other plans this summer, and who are the guys you're trying to recruit? I know you mentioned Malcolm Green from Virginia, the safety, as someone, but yeah, what are all your plans, and who are you trying to recruit?
I mean, the really only plans I have is that visit and the opening, but other than Malcolm right now, I'm just really just talking to Michael Redding too. I don't really talk to him that much, but every now and then I'll say something in his ear.
Chris, where are you weight wise right now, and where would you like to be when you show up at Notre Dame, and is there any chance you would early enroll?
I don't think I can early enroll in Chesterfield, but I'm 183 right now.
And what would you like to show up at Notre Dame? What would your, I know that's a long way off. I mean, it's a year from June, but what college weight, what do you kind of think you'd play at?
Being that I'm 183 right now, I could probably be like 190, 195 when I get there.
Okay.
Chris, what's kind of your goals now in terms of moving forward? Obviously, you talked about winning a state championship, but personally, what do you want to improve on to become a better football player?
Pretty much just getting stronger. I mean, I feel like as long as I keep working on everything else, I mean, that's pretty much what everyone has been critiquing me about. Getting stronger, more powerful, more explosive.
You went to two practices for Notre Dame. You went to the Cotton Bowl practice, I believe, December 15th, and then I believe you returned March 23rd and you got to see a spring practice. What were your impressions of Notre Dame's football team and particularly their running back group?
One thing that stood out was the O-line. I mean, it moved very well. I mean, that's just really exciting, being that I'm a running back. But the running back group is a really good group, actually. I mean, Coach Taylor really knows what he's doing. I mean, I'm glad I got to see him work in person before I actually committed. But, yeah, that was very exciting.
And Chris, your defensive numbers that I saw looked really good. I'm curious, are you going to continue to play both sides of the ball? And did anybody try to recruit you as a defensive player?
Yeah, I'm still playing. I'll be playing safety this year. But, in my mind, I'm going to be 1DB too. But, I don't think anybody really recruited me as a DB. It was pretty much just running back from eighth grade. So, nobody really switched to it.
Now, Chris, right now you're the only running back in Notre Dame's 2020 class. And there have been previous discussions about them recruiting two running backs in the class. Well, how has Notre Dame explained that to you, and do you mind or care if there's another running back in this class?
I mean, they told me that they're only taking one, but, I mean, if they get another one, then I don't really have a problem with it.
Chris, when you look back at your recruitment, certainly I believe your first offer was Marshall when you were a freshman. What will you remember the most, and what were kind of the hardest things you had to go through in that process?
In the recruiting process?
Yeah.
Well, one, that first offer. I mean, it was crazy. I thought my dad was joking to me. When he got off the phone with Coach Tuck and told me I was getting an offer from Marshall, I was confused. I was in eighth grade, but, I mean, that was a crazy moment for sure. But, I mean, every offer was definitely a really good one. I mean, that's a good feeling every time you get one, but my favorite part is just traveling to see new places, you know, meeting new people. But, yeah, that's my favorite part.
That is 2020 Notre Dame football four-star running back recruit Chris Tyree joining the South Bend Tribune staff. Carter Carls, Eric Hansen, Tyler James on a recent installment of the Indy Insider Pot of Gold, which is available at IndyInsider.com. They have archived all of their recent interviews, so please check that out at IndyInsider.com. Carter Carls, our Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune, will join us next with his recruiting update as Sports Beat continues. It is 5:31 at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. It is time on this Thursday for Carter Carls to join us. IndyInsider.com, Notre Dame football recruiting update. He's the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. He joins us every Thursday at 5:30 to talk Fighting Irish football recruiting. Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett also with you on this Thursday evening. Carter, how are you?
I'm doing good, but I have a bone to pick with you, Darren.
That's what I hear. I can't wait to find out what I have allegedly done.
Well, it's more jealousy than anything. My, I was talking with my dad yesterday, and it was good to know that he listens to the show, but
okay.
He said, hey, who's that guy that goes on with you and Eric all the time? I said, oh, you mean Darren? He's like, yeah, he is really good. He's full of personality. He's got great delivery, really articulate.
Oh, my gosh.
I like this Darren guy. And I said, well, what do you think about me? How do I do? You're all right. So I aspire to be you now, Darren. Maybe one day my dad will be as proud of me as he is of you.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, that was very, very kind of him. So, I don't know, maybe the summer heat gets to him down there in Texas, possibly, but very nice to hear those comments. In this business, normally you find out all the things you did wrong, so every once in a while it's nice to hear something positive. So, Mr. Carls, thank you. I greatly appreciate that. We enjoy having your son on the program, that's for sure. When his cell phone holds up, that's the one thing. Every once in a while it gets a little crackly, so we're going to buy you a new cell phone.
Maybe that's the reason.
That could be. Your cell phone is dragging down your personality and delivery.
That's got to be it. That's the only. So if anyone's ever mad at me, I can just blame my cell phone.
You know what? Sean, you know, we've been doing this program for 25 years now. Once we get into the positive revenue stream, we're going to buy him a cell phone. One of these days we'll get out of the red. That's right. All right. So now that we've taken care of that, let's ask about a Twitter shutdown today. What's that all about?
Yeah, were you guys affected by that? I was going to, I don't know, some of my friends were, and I was, but Twitter was shut down for an hour, which is, I mean, to a millennial like myself, that's like 6 months long. It felt like the apocalypse for a little bit. Did that happen to you guys?
I have not been in front of my computer all afternoon. I did not notice it.
Was that this morning? Maybe that was the hour I was out mowing my yard. I don't know.
It was the afternoon. I think some people had it, some people didn't. It's back now, so everyone can calm down. But
interesting.
There was an hour there where it felt like we were going to lose Twitter, which big part of my job, big part of Eric and Tyler's and y'all's jobs. We can finally rest in peace.
Would have had the shakes.
Okay. I'll let Sean kick off the recruiting portion of our conversation.
Well, let's talk about the top safety target, Lathan Ransom. He's going to announce his commitment next Tuesday. Where do you think he's going to end up?
Yeah, next Tuesday, his 17th birthday. Ransom, you know, he was at the opening finals in Frisco last week, and I watched him from afar, and he did a really good job, was a really impressive athlete. Could end up being a five-star when it's all said and done. He narrowed his recruitment down to three schools, Notre Dame, Texas, and Ohio State. He took official visits to all three. I'm really feeling Ohio State here for Lathan Ransom. That's where most people are picking him to go as well. You just watch him all week, and he was. It reminded me of Isaiah Foskey at the All-American Bowl. At the All-American Bowl, Isaiah Foskey was hanging out with Notre Dame guys the entire time. It was pretty obvious that he had already signed with Notre Dame, even though he kept it kind of a secret. And then that came out on National Signing Day. This is the same thing. He was hanging out with Ohio State guys all week, all the commits that were there. Didn't really see much interaction between him and the Notre Dame commits, to be honest. And then his last official visit was at Ohio State, which is pretty much sometimes a telling sign that they're saving the best for last before the summer official visits are over. So I'm feeling Ohio State for Lathan Ransom.
All right. So, Carter, if Lathan, in fact, holds Notre Dame ransom. So what's the backup plan at the safety position for the Irish?
Just with the few defensive backs that I've talked to, it really seems like Notre Dame is taking its time. July is a dead period. Coaches are on vacation. There's a reason why there isn't much communication. But I think they feel like they're at a good stopping point. They're at 17 commits for this 2020 recruiting class. And it's really about kind of reassessing and going from scratch and seeing who are the guys that they really care about. Now, I talked with Ramon Henderson, a California cornerback. He says he's planning to take a September 28th official visit for Notre Dame's home game against Virginia. I think Dante Manning, he used to be a big-time cornerback target for Notre Dame before he committed to Oklahoma. Now he's decommitted from Oklahoma, and I think he could possibly take an official visit this fall. Cornerback Christian Gonzalez out of Texas, he took an official visit last month. He could be a guy that will be worth monitoring for Notre Dame. And then there's a few safety options. Elijah Gaines, out of Virginia. He put Notre Dame in his top seven. Texas safety Jaron Thompson, I talked to him last night. He's hoping to take an official visit this fall. And then Virginia safety Malcolm Green is one to watch and is a guy that Chris Tyree is recruiting. So there are options out there, and I think they would probably want to take just two more defensive backs. They already have three committed. I think getting a true safety is the priority. And if they're not going to get Ransom, then they'll probably turn to someone like Malcolm Green or Jaron Thompson or Elijah Gaines. But as of right now, it's pretty slow moving for Notre Dame, and I don't think that there's going to be a lot of traction until the fall.
So, Carter, with 17 now committed, how many spots are there still left in the 2020 recruiting class?
Well, it's a fluid situation because I think they kind of want to see where everything takes them. Now, I believe that there's probably three or four spots left. Getting to 20 or 21 commits is probably where they want to see themselves at. But it also depends on a variety of factors. What happens if Jalen McMillan decides that he wants to take his Notre Dame official visit and he, you know, gets reinterested in Notre Dame again? What happens if Michael Redding emerges as an option? What happens if Dante Manning takes his official visit to Notre Dame and really likes it? I think it's dependent on a few guys that are kind of fluid and what they want to do. I think defensive back is still the priority. They want to add a couple more there, and then maybe they add another lineman. Maybe they add another receiver if McMillan backs out. So I think it's just a fluid situation, but at the end of the day, I'm only expecting three or four more to commit. And I really think it's a good idea to only have 19, 20 guys committed in this 2020 class, because the 2021 class is pretty loaded right now with plenty of talent. Notre Dame has the number two recruiting class for 2021. They already have five guys committed. So, hey, if you don't reach that number, if you fall short at 19 or 20, that just means an extra body in this 2021 class. So I think, yeah, the situation is one worth monitoring and not one where it's like, hey, they're totally going to take four, they're totally going to take five or three. It all kind of depends on how things shake out in these next few months.
We're talking Fighting Irish Football Recruiting with Carter Carls, Fighting Irish Football Recruiting Insider for the South Bend Tribune. 2020 class, the quarterback is a four-star, Drew Pine. He's been involved with the opening. He's been named to the Elite 11. It's been a pretty good run for Pine lately.
It has been, and he's going to enroll early at Notre Dame in January, which he'll be the first Notre Dame quarterback to do so since Malik Zaire in 2013. Early enrolling is something that at Notre Dame is still pretty new. I mean, Charlie Weiss is the one who introduced it in the mid-2000s, so I think having him on campus early, having a full quarterback room with four guys, in that room, if Book stays for his final year, that'll be big time for Notre Dame, because in the spring it was pretty funny watching just Ian Book and Phil Jurkovic go at it, because it was like, where's the third guy? Where's the fourth guy? And so now they won't be as much empty-handed next spring. They'll have four guys in a rotation likely. So, but yeah, Pine has had a very good stretch. I still think 247 sees him as a three-star recruit. Rivals sees him as a high-rated four-star recruit. He's one of the most polarizing recruits. I think he's the most polarizing recruit in this 2020 class committed to Notre Dame. And so seeing him next spring, I'm very intrigued to see, because he definitely has a lot of varying opinions from multiple recruiting analysts.
Who else in this class do you think plans to enroll early next spring?
So there are four guys I know for sure will enroll early. Riley Mills, the defensive tackle out of Chicago. Xavier Watts, the Nebraska receiver that committed last week. Jordan Botello, the drop defensive end prospect out of Hawaii. And then Michael Mayer, the tight end out of Kentucky. And then there's a few guys that likely will, and maybe might, they're hoping to. Caleb Offord, he told me that he's hoping to, but isn't sure yet. Jay Brunell, he goes to an all-boys Catholic school in Massachusetts. He's hoping to go, but not sure if his school is cool with that. And then Alexander Ehrensberger, the German defensive end, he's hoping to do January and enroll then, but you never know when you're coming out of Germany if everything will work out. So it's probably going to end up, last class they had 10 early enrollees, and it will probably be 8, 9, or 10 for this class as well, which last cycle, 10 early enrollees was the record for Notre Dame. So it looks like that number is going to be continued in these following classes.
Carter, you mentioned Brunell. Jay Brunell, 6'1 wide receiver, 2020 class out of Paxton, Massachusetts. You're working on a film study on this wide receiver. What have you learned about him so far?
First thing I learned was how complicated the Massachusetts football system is. I mean, I had to have his dad call me today and explain to me for about 15 minutes how Massachusetts football is constructed. It's very confusing. They have all these different divisions, and Central Massachusetts and Southern Massachusetts have different divisions. I'm not even going to explain it, because it would probably torture you guys. But that's the first thing I learned about Bruno. He was at the Irish Invasion Camp June 9th, and really impressed me there. The thing that's really stood out there and on his film were his hands. I mean, it seemed like no matter how draped a cornerback or defensive back is on this kid, he will always find a way to secure the football. No matter how much of a 50-50 ball it is, a jump ball, or maybe it's a slant and the cornerback has his arms wrapped around him, he's still going to find a way to catch the ball. He's a really tough kid at 6'2", 200. I still think he's fairly raw. He's coming out of Massachusetts where the competition level isn't that great. With his side, his speed, his strength, he's pretty much able to dominate whoever is going up against him. He's not playing much Power 5 talent, so he's going to have to develop technique, and he's going to have to learn to become a better route runner and really learn the finer technical aspects of the game. And I think if he ends up enrolling early, which he hopes to do, that will be tremendous for him. I see him as a boundary receiver at Notre Dame. We'll see how that shapes out. He plays outside receiver for his school at St. John's High, and so Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching his senior season.
Well, Carter, what do you foresee now as being the next big recruiting weekends for the Fighting Irish?
Well, Notre Dame did not have any favors with their schedule this year. They've got one home night game with USC, and three of their biggest games, Michigan, Stanford, and Georgia, are on the road. Mm-hmm. So really not a lot of prime time official visit weekends this fall. But I still see Virginia and USC being the biggest ones that they'll have. Virginia, September 28th, USC, October 12th, especially USC, I think that will be a big one. And then with how much this class is wrapped up, I just don't know if there's going to be that many big-time official visit weekends. Mm-hmm. Bowling Green, New Mexico, I mean, are there really going to be official visits those weekends? I don't really know. I know last year, Pittsburgh, they only had one official visitor, and that was Harrison Leonard, I believe. And so maybe this fall will be more of a chance for them to look at 2021 guys and bring in walk-on prospects and things of that nature. I don't really see many huge, big-time official visit weekends besides Virginia and USC.
All right, Mr. Carls, what type of stories are you working on for the South Bend Tribune and IndieInsider.com?
Yeah, I'm going to be working on that Jay Brunell film study, as well as another film study on Caleb Armstrong that came in for the Irish last week. And then I'm going to, at some point, write a defensive back recruiting primer and just kind of break down what the options are left for Notre Dame.
And you are the featured guest on the Pot of Gold this time for the South Bend Tribune and IndieInsider.com.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's a great episode, so check it out. Yeah, it's a lot of recruiting. An hour and 5 minutes of me yapping on and on.
Wow.
Recruiting, so you might want to listen to it on 2x speed. I don't know if people are maniacal enough to do that. You can do that. I listen to podcasts on 2x speed. My friends think I'm crazy, but I think it's the way to go. So maybe that'll be how they power through the hour and a half, or hour and 5 minutes.
I didn't know you could do that, so I learned something. Very good. Carter Carls. Okay, very good. Carter Carls, Fighting Irish Football Recruiting Insider for the South Bend Tribune. We always appreciate your time, and enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
As always, thank you. Carter Carls, covering Fighting Irish Football Recruiting for the South Bend Tribune and IndieInsider.com. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the My 5 next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Little short on time, Eric. Sean, I'm going to let you to the My 5 question of the day. That's 10 years of habit saying Eric's name.
No problem.
All right, so Sean, you're going to be in charge of the My 5. Jim Bouton, the author of the controversial baseball book, Ball 4, passed away yesterday. So we ask you your favorite 5 sports books. We start with number 5.
My number 5 is called Is This a Great Game or What? It's by Tim Kirkjian. It's a fun book of baseball stories from Kirkjian in his time covering Major League Baseball for a couple decades.
He is a very intelligent baseball guy. Number 4.
Number 4 is called The Teammates. It's by David Halberstam. It's a story of the lives and friendships of the 1940s Boston Red Sox teammates Ted Williams, Dom DiMaggio, Johnny Pesky, and Bobby Doerr. It's kind of told in little flashbacks as DiMaggio and Pesky drive to see Williams in his last days in Florida before he died.
I hear that's a great book. I've never read that.
Yep.
Number 3.
Number 3 is another baseball book called The Summer Game by Roger Angel. He's one of the top baseball writers of all time. It's another series of short stories, and one of my favorites, it was 1981. Ron Darling is pitching for Yale. Frank Viola for St. John's. They pitched dueling no-hitters for 11 innings. Darling struck out 16 and lost 1-0.
Wow, that's quite the story. Yep. Number 2.
Number 2 is called If I Never Get Back. It is a novel, fiction, by Daryl Brock. It's a modern-day reporter. He gets off a train in San Francisco, finds himself in 1869, and he ends up playing for the early Cincinnati Reds. It's a pretty cool little fun time travel book. with
I like
baseball
that.
Tied in. Yep.
And number one on your list of favorite sports books.
Number one, I'm guessing, is probably your favorite as well, Moneyball.
Yeah.
Great book. It's one of the few books that I have read multiple times. I think I've read it at least three times, if not three and a half times. Love that book.
Michael Lewis did a great job teaching us about the analytics portion of the game.
He did.
We'll take a minute break. Sports Beat rolls on next on WSBT. It is the top of the hour. More Sports Beat to come, including a little rapid fire in a little bit. Also, Sean's American League Power Rank.
Celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame is moving on to the Elite Eight. Taylor, he stopped. Notre Dame wins.
Lick Leitner and Smallbone have been the catalysts for South Bend St. Joseph's.
Jalen Smith verbally committed to play football at Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame is going to Omaha for the first time since 1957.
Rebound, run the wall, middle. Score! The Irish are going to the championship game!
Congratulations, Tom, on the championship.
Thank you. We brought one back to South Bend finally.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske win the Daytona 500.
Leitner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
Can't express how sorry I am towards my time.
And the White Sox have won the World Series.
I don't pay a damn bit of attention to what people on the outside say, because I understand none of them, though.
York now in front. Ogilvy, they score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four!
The Colts of Indianapolis win Super Bowl 41.
The Fighting Irish are national champions in 2001. Notre Dame! Notre Dame! Notre Dame is the national champion!
Is that the play that will seal the playoff bid for Fighting Irish?
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
SportsBeat continues on 96.1 WSBT, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Eddy Street Commons at Notre Dame, hosting Coffee and Cars this Saturday, July 13th from 9 to 1. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Lechleitner Door Sales and Service. At Lechleitner, they open all the right doors. Sean back in our WSBT studios. I'm Darren with the South Bend Cubs. Kane County at South Bend, 7:05 first pitch on WSBT Radio. Tomorrow at noon, another installment of Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT Radio. Sean Stiers will be hosting that program. What will be your location and what is on your sports talk menu?
We will be back at Five Star Dive Bar this week. They were closed last week, the entire week, for the 4th of July. So Evan and I will be back there, and we've got some Notre Dame conversation going on with some Notre Dame football as we're inching closer and closer to the start of both the season and training camp. It's hard to believe. Training camp is like, what, 3 or so weeks away, I think, at this point. Maybe 3-plus weeks, something like that. So we'll be doing that. Well, also, of course, Evan, in addition to playing football at Notre Dame, played baseball there as well. So he's always been pretty outspoken when it comes to what's going on with Notre Dame baseball. And we'll get into the coaching situation over there. It's looking like any day we're going to see a head coach announced. So we'll talk a little bit about Link Jarrett, who is looking like is going to be the next baseball coach at Notre Dame.
And he is from where?
He is from UNC Greensboro in the Southern Conference.
Okay, so we're probably in the portion of the process that they're going through all the particulars to make sure everything adds up.
That's
and
right.
And then we'll have an announcement.
That's right. That's what I've been told by more than one person, that it's going to be him. It's just a matter of getting those. The George O'Leary effect is what I called it yesterday.
Yeah.
Getting all that stuff taken care of and make sure everything is what it's supposed to be before they officially announce him as the head coach.
Makes total sense. All right, so the clock is ticking. I know a very important time of the year for baseball recruiting. So we'll see when that announcement will be made. But Sean and Evan will talk about that storyline tomorrow noon right here on 96.1 WSBT. The Leprechaun Lunch. Tom Noy is here from the South Bend Tribune. He is covering the game for the Tribune and did a piece with Buddy Bailey earlier tonight. And during the last break, he brought in a copy of the Indy Insider Notre Dame Football Annual that is now available for all Irish fans to purchase in the South Bend area where your favorite magazines are sold. And it's available online for those of you outside the market. Maybe you're streaming the show, the podcast. You can go to IndyInsider.com. There's a banner ad where you can't miss it. It says the Notre Dame Football Preview. You can order it and get it sent to your house. So it's available. And I'm just kind of thumbing through it during the CBS Sports Update. And first, I love always the quality of pages. They use high quality paper, so I really like that. But I've been going through the recruiting class, the freshman group, and they have bios and they ask them all sorts of questions, so it's kind of fun to look through there. And I have to admit, there was a name that was listed by two or three guys. I had no idea who it was, so I'm going to see if you're good with pop culture. As soon as I looked it up, I'm like, duh, now I know who it is. I just didn't realize what her name was. But they ask them all sorts of questions, and a question that everybody answers is your celebrity crush. And a couple of them said Gal Gadot. Do you know who that is?
She is the woman who played...
you're getting it.
Wonder Woman. Yeah, she was Wonder Woman. Yeah.
I had to look it up.
I had to think of my female superhero. I had to make sure I was saying the right one. Yeah.
I mean, the normal names are in there. Beyonce, Ariana Grande. But then I came up with Gal Gadot. I'm like, who is that? And then I looked it up, and it's Wonder Woman now.
Yeah.
I totally understand. So the Indy Insider Notre Dame Football Annual is available. I can't wait to start reading it. And it is a good-looking magazine. Again, I love the quality of pictures. Everything is color. The pages are great quality. So you'll have some fun checking out the latest in Notre Dame football news with the IndyInsider.com recruiting update. And we are going to be next week we're going to start rolling through a lot of Notre Dame football information. I've went back today and gotten all of our spring conversations, and I've been getting that audio ready to talk about various storylines for the 2019 season. So this is our pre-training camp refresher course in all things happening with Notre Dame football. So we've got audio from players, Brian Kelly, Chip Long, Clark Lee, the list goes on and on. So we will start going down memory lane from spring and bring back up storylines and developments that occurred back in the spring that will obviously affect the Fighting Irish as they start training camp. And, of course, the linebacker position. You can figure out who's going to play where because we don't know at this point. That's going to be one of the mysteries. But we'll go back and play back some of the audio of Clark Lee talking about traits he wants in the linebacker. So we'll have all that for you starting next week here on WSBT Radio. So look for that starting on Monday. Major League Baseball, a little reboot tonight. The second half gets started with the Houston Astros visiting the Texas Rangers in game one of a four-game series involving AL West teams. So this is the perfect day to unveil the post-All-Star break, Sean's American League power rankings. So if I remember correctly, I think you had the Yankees at number one the last time we did this last Thursday. Yeah. Okay, we'll see if anything changes there. But we will start with team number six, and that would mean the team that would be the first team out of the playoffs since five make it in each league. So I'll let you take it away from there, number six.
All right, the number six team is the Cleveland Indians rejoining the top six in the power rankings for the first time in a while. They had fallen out, and the Indians' offense has finally woken up, and it helped them take a six-game winning streak into the All-Star break. Carlos Santana, of course, was not great in the home run derby, but he does lead the Indians with 19 home runs, 52 RBIs, and, of course, the staff ERA is 3.94, the fifth best in all of baseball.
Wow.
They do occupy the second wild card spot as of right now, but I've got them at number six.
That ERA is pretty impressive considering Corey Kluber, their ace, has been out for over a month.
Yeah.
You got Carlos Carrasco, who is dealing with leukemia right now.
Yep.
Now, Shane Bieber, the MVP of the All-Star game, has been a big boost. But without Kluber and Carrasco, that's a pretty good team ERA.
It is. It really is. And, I mean, where would they be without the Biebs? And they're talking about trading possibly Trevor Bauer possibly on the trading block. So that'll be interesting to watch here over the next few weeks.
They've got a lot of big money decisions to make over the next few years in Cleveland. Power rankings, American League, team number five.
I've got the Oakland A's in the in the power rankings. I think for the first time this season, or maybe I might have had them in the initial rankings all the way back when, because we thought that they were going to be good after last year. And they're another team on the rise after a slow start. It's funny because, of course, the Mariners started hot, and they've completely fizzled, and now the A's started slowly. They've caught fire, 14-5 down the stretch going into the break. They're just a game and a half behind Cleveland for that second wild card spot right now.
23-19 against teams 500 or better so far this year, and I see their run differential's up to plus 67.
Yep.
And that right now is number four in the American League. They just always seem to come out of nowhere.
They
remarkable.
Do. They really do.
America League Power Rankings, team number four.
I've got Tampa Bay at number four. The Rays would host the wild card game if it was today. We did our predictions yesterday. I have Charlie Morton as my Cy Young winner, their ace pitcher. Austin Meadows as my AL Rookie of the Year. We'll see where he is, how healthy he is coming out of the All-Star break. Their 3.32 ERA leads all of baseball. They get four games in Baltimore as kind of a warm-up coming out of the break, and then they get seven of their next 10 against the Yankees and the Red Sox. It just does never get any easier, it seems like, for Tampa Bay.
All right, so the Rays come in at number four. Now we move to number three in your America League Power Rankings.
Twins here at number three. Minnesota's team 833 OPS leads the majors, as do their 166 home runs. They've got 188 doubles, just one behind the Rockies, who, I mean, they hit doubles in their sleep, I think, in Denver. So, and even though they don't have a lot of pitching behind Jose Berrios, they do have the sixth best team ERA in the game. And as again, as in our predictions yesterday, I think we both had Rocco Baldelli as our AL Manager of the Year.
Odorizzi and Berrios and a whole bunch of other guys. Martin Perez, who came from the Rangers, who hadn't done anything, he's been okay. So they are piecing it together pitching-wise, and I'm sure they'll be a factor at the deadline trying to add another starting pitcher, because all of a sudden the Indians have kind of snuck up on the Twins. Remember when it was double digits? It's 5.5 right now, heading to the unofficial start of the second half. All right, number two in your power rankings.
Houston at number two. The Astros have had the best balance in terms of starting pitching and lineup for most of the season. They dipped a little in June with some guys injured, but they're starting to surge again, tied with the Yankees for the most wins in the American League with 57. They have the number two team OPS at 816, even better than the Dodgers. So maybe a little underrated what their offense has been. And it's funny kind of watching, because Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander over this last month have kind of swapped in terms of what they've done, because Verlander was pretty dominant early and Cole really struggled, and now it's been the other way around. Justin Verlander's been pretty boisterous in terms of the baseball and all that stuff, and he's kind of trying to figure himself out on the mound right now.
I believe you got a slap on the wrist from baseball.
Yeah.
For those comments.
That's right.
Astros against teams with 500 or better records, 30-21. Awfully good.
Yeah,
awfully good. And right now you got, in their division, the A's are 9 over .500. The Rangers are 6 over very quietly. And the Angels, despite having pitching issues, only one game under .500. Yep. So 57-33 in that division is pretty doggone good. And that leaves us with number one in your America League Power Rankings.
I've got the Yankees at the top once again, plus 113 run differential, second only to the Twins. They split four games with Tampa just before the All-Star break, but they had won 14 of 16 prior to that. And so their starting pitching is still their weakness, and is going to be until maybe they go out and make a deal or two. But they, of course, make up with it with that offense that has 149 home runs.
Zach Wheeler's out there, the Met right-hander.
Yeah, very true.
Maybe Noah Syndergaard. We'll see if they really get frisky in New York. With that GM, the old agent, you never know what they're going to do. They pulled off the Cano trade, and that has bombed. I mean, the closer they got in Cano have not performed anywhere close to expectations. So that trade's going to sting New York for a long time. They gave up the number six pick in the draft. Kelsnick, I think is his name, an outfielder, a high school kid who's just tearing it up in the Mariners organization. That trade may come back to be one that affects the Mets for many, many years, while the Yankees just sit and laugh as they're 57-31 with a 648 winning percentage. Unreal.
It's the old Jay Buhner trade.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think Costanza might have been hired by the Mets when they pulled off that trade. It didn't make any sense before they even played a game, just considering all the money left on Cano's deal, back end of his career coming off the PED suspension. That was a frisky move, and boy, it's not turning out well for the Metropolitans. That's the power rankings for Sean in the American League. I will do the power rankings for the National League on tomorrow's program. It is 6:20 on the button. When we come back, another installment of Rapid Fire as Sports Beat continues from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Rapid Fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Steyers and Darren Pritchett.
Well, Darren, after going 12-0 in the regular season last year, Athlon magazine says Notre Dame could go 9-3 this year and be just as good as last year's team. Do you buy or sell that?
9-3 this year and be just as good as last year. This is one of those mathematical equations they do at MIT.
Yeah.
Well, they're saying the Irish could play just as well as last year, but instead of going 12-0, go 9-3.
Correct.
I would say no, because I think there are two games that you immediately look at and say these are difficult, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm not confident in the Irish in these games, but I think when you look at it, you say, okay, these are going to be difficult, and that is at Georgia and at Michigan.
Right.
Those are going to be challenging contests. Stanford, I think that's a game you have a very good chance of winning. Now we'll see how much different Stanford is this year compared to last year. They got KJ Costello back at quarterback, so it gives them a fighting chance. But I would say if they go 9-3, they're not playing as well as last year.
Okay.
I still think there's enough winnable football games that if they play at last year's level, I would think 11-1 is a realistic possibility.
Okay.
They can beat Michigan. I think the Georgia game is going to be extremely difficult. They're going to have to play a really, really strong football game with limited mistakes.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, I mean, I think you can kind of make this case in just about any given year, because it's not just about how good you are, but it is also about the schedule that you have, the level of competition, and what those teams are in any given year. And just like you and everyone else, I agree. I mean, and last year there were really probably two big games on the schedule, Michigan and Stanford, and of course they got both of them at home. And as you said, now you flip it where you've got Michigan and Georgia on the road, and you throw in Stanford as well, where they haven't won in 12 years, so that still has to kind of be a factor as well. So I tend to agree with that because of those three games right there, Michigan, Georgia, a place you haven't won since 2007. Now, again, you can't get dominated in those games, and you're going to be just as good as the team that you had last year. But I tend to agree with it, that you could theoretically lose those three games if they're three good close games, and really not be that much worse in all actuality than the 12-0 team you had last year.
Okay.
All right. Scale of 1 to 10. What is your overall confidence level in the Chicago Cubs right now?
10 being they're going to go win the World Series and dominate the pack.
Or at least 10, they're going to be a legitimate contender, I guess, even if they don't completely dominate the pack.
Well, if 10 is being a contender, I'll go 10. They're definitely going to be in the hunt. I think it's going to be a two-team race. It's going to be Milwaukee and the Cubs battling it out. Both have flaws right now that they'll look to fix. The Brewers probably have more of a chance to fix their issues with their minor league system compared to the Cubs.
Yeah.
But if we're just going to base it on being in the hunt coming down the stretch, well, I'm going to have to go a 10 on that. Now, if you just want to say, are they going to win the division? What are the chances of that? I would say right now 7.
Okay. Maybe in the hunt. I'm talking about in the hunt to at least contend to go to the World Series. It's probably a pretty broad definition,
sure.
But yeah, I mean, this kind of goes back to some of the stuff that we talked about in the first hour with where they are, what they need to do, and all that stuff. I just, as they're constructed right now, and that obviously includes with Ben Zobrist still being on leave of absence and Cole Hamels on the injured list, my confidence in them as a winning championship caliber team. Now, they might win the division, but the division is, we're still maybe trying to figure out exactly what it is. My confidence is only a 5 right now. So they need that bat, some kind of bat that's going to give them a spark, more consistency, a center fielder who's going to play better. They need probably another bullpen arm. That would go a long way. If they get two of those three things, then maybe I'm up 7.5, 8. But just as they're constructed right now, my confidence level is middling at best, I guess.
Nico Hoerner to the rescue.
Could be.
Play second base. He can play short. We're finding out he can play center. He got an assist in his first game playing center field for AA Tennessee. I do believe they feel like he could be a possible help to their major league roster. Now, he missed over a month getting hit by a pitch. We only had him for 4 games last year due to an injury. So I hate to put the injury label on him, but he's had a couple of significant injuries so far in the Cubs organization. I don't think it's going to be a problem going forward. But a guy that can kind of take that Zobrist role on, play multiple positions. He has a quality bat. I mentioned this about Nico when he was here. He's the guy on the scouting report, Sean, that's not going to blow you away in any category. He's not going to be one of those 80 players. And 80 is the highest grade you give a player in various categories. But I'll tell you what, he may not be excellent in one category, but he's very, very good in everything. He doesn't have a weakness. So even though he may not have that elite tool, he's a contact hitter. He's got a little bit of pop that I think will continue to develop. He's got a great glove, good feet, good instincts on the field. He is a guy that can help the Chicago Cubs, without a doubt. So keep Nico Hoerner in mind over the next couple of weeks.
All right, definitely will. Now, my next couple of questions got cut off my sheet that I printed off, so I'm going to try to remember them as best that I can. There's an interesting story. Yeah, so I'm sitting here looking through my sheets, and I'm going, that can't be it. But, okay, so there was an interesting story that popped up that I saw today in the Indianapolis Star. And this is a fill-in-the-blank. Bob Knight apparently bought a home just 3 miles from IU's Assembly Hall. So that is blank.
Well, first I want to say, you know what? If you don't remember all the questions, it's okay. Sometimes the teleprompter goes out and you get facts a little mixed up. You know, airports and the Revolutionary War. But no, I think, I hope that is a step closer toward a reunion between the two. I mean, there's no doubt IU's arms are wide open for a reunion with Bob Knight. The fans would absolutely love it. From what we have heard through media stories, his health may not be as good as it has been. And we just see all these great tributes at IU from some of these great teams, and he's not there. And I understand how he's angry, how he was let go, and how things ended, but all those people are gone that made those decisions. And it would be great for the fan base. And you know what? I think it'd be good for Bob Knight, too, and I hope he realizes that, to reunite with the university. You don't have to be arm-in-arm all the time, but if the 76 team is honored or the 75 team, the 81 team, that's a guy that needs to be there because he was the reason why they were so good. He brought in quality players. He nurtured them, put together great game plans, fundamentals. He was IU basketball, and you know what? I think even though he may not admit it, I think going back to IU and hearing those cheers again would probably mean a whole lot to him, and I hope we get to that point.
Yeah, it's obvious that IU is opening up to him, and so maybe this, as you said, is a sign that he's sort of breaking down those barriers that he's put up for going on 19 years now, the last time that he was there at Assembly Hall. Now, he did go back. Remember, in April, he spoke in, I think it was in the Indianapolis area, there was an IU function down there, and he spoke, and then the next day he actually went to an IU baseball game and attended, and that was the first time he was on campus in all those years. So it sounds like maybe he's trying to get back. He said, I guess, at that function that he was at in April, he apparently repeated five different times the best days of his life were the ones that he spent coaching at IU. So maybe this is a sign that he's finally ready to get back. I guess he still owns a house in Lubbock, Texas. This house that he bought down there in Bloomington, $600,000 that he bought last week. He and his wife bought it last week. So, I mean, if you're going to drop that kind of money, you would think that you would be trying to get back closer. So hopefully that's the case. And you also hope, because I remember Don Fisher said in April that Knight's health was not very good. So you hope that this also maybe isn't some kind of sign that it's worsening and he's just trying to get back as close as he can, sort of the last days and that kind of thing. Hopefully his health is not as bad as maybe we thought.
And if his health is okay, it would be incredible to schedule 10 dates all across the state, Knight and Katie on a stage telling stories.
That would be great.
You know how you have comedians going all across the country and they do their bits together? How about just two guys on a stage in nice recliners with a beverage and microphones in their hand and just telling stories? I don't know about you, but as someone that's not necessarily an IU or a Purdue fan first, I would go to that. And I know IU and Purdue fans, I mean, you talk about the opportunity to get two legends together like that. Yeah. It would be fantastic, because I think if Bob would open up, I think Katie would open up too and tell a lot of great stories.
Yep, that'd be really good. That's a great idea. Hopefully something like that's able to happen sometime. That'd be great. All right, last question for tonight. Greg Amsinger of MLB Network is predicting that Dodgers pitcher Hyunjin Ryu will win both the MVP and the Cy Young Award in the National League. So do you buy or sell that happening?
Well, first, let me apologize on his behalf. He's from St. Louis and is a Cardinal fan, and I think their awful play has affected his decision-making. So I'm going to give him a pass on this.
Okay.
But his numbers are outstanding so far. But Christian Yelich and Cody Bellinger have a big say in this. And let's take this a step further. This is not an original thought. I saw it on MLB.com today, so I give them credit. If you think about it, Yelich has a chance to make history as the first guy in baseball history with 50 home runs and 30 stolen bases in the same season. If anything close to that happens, the only guy that can beat Yelich is Bellinger. And that's it. So, no, I'm not buying it. I can understand the ERA. And when it comes to these awards, I'm not a big fan of the baseball writers and some of their decisions. So anything is possible. But I'm just betting it's a Yelich-Bellinger final right now for MVP if things continue on the same path.
Yeah, it's only happened 11 times in Major League Baseball history that a pitcher has won both the Cy Young and MVP award in the same season. And typically when it happens, it's because there is not a strong enough candidate on the hitting side. And so the pitcher ends up getting it. And along with that, he is also pretty darn dominant on the mound. The last to do it was Clayton Kershaw in 2014. Before that, it was Justin Verlander in 2011. Then you have to go all the way back to 1992 to Dennis Eckersley before it happened. So I don't see it either, because there are the two guys you just mentioned, two really strong candidates right there in Christian Yelich and Cody Bellinger. And I think the fact that Bellinger is also a teammate of Ryu's also works against Ryu. I just don't think that he's going to get enough of the immediate media who are really watching him a lot. I don't think he's going to get enough of their votes for it to be able to happen. So I agree with what you're saying. I think right now he's the front runner to win the Cy Young, Ryu is, but I think that it's either going to be Cody Bellinger or Christian Yelich winning the MVP award.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you there.
Okay.
And if the Padres get in the postseason, Machado will probably be a big reason why he might finish in the top five. I don't think he'll have enough to knock off those two. They're just so far ahead of the pack right now. But I know what he's going with, but it's a two-horse race as of right now. But things can change, that's for sure.
Yep.
That'll take care of Rapid Fire. It is 6:37. Sean and Darren with you. Chicago Cubs report coming up. And some details on a Cubs prospect here in South Bend is trying to regain his form. We'll tell you about that in a couple of moments. The Sports Beat rolls on from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sports Beat at 6:41 on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, Sean Stiers. He'll be hosting Leprechaun Lunch tomorrow at noon with our pal Evan Sharpley. Check him out, WSBTradio.com, 96.1 WSBT, tomorrow at noon. South Bend Cubs baseball coming up in just a few moments. So here's our Chicago Cubs report for today. No game today for the Northsiders. They host the Pittsburgh Pirates tomorrow at 2:20. Yu Darvish on the mound for Chicago. Former Cubs prospect Chris Archer goes for the Buccos. Chicago will start tomorrow in first place in the Central, 47 up, 43 down, a half a game in front of Milwaukee, two ahead of St. Louis. The Buccos only 2.5 back, and the Redlegs are 4.5 back. So anything is possible. The Reds are closer to first as a last-place team in the Central than any other second-place team in the other five divisions. It's really, really bizarre. You look at the breakdown, the Cubs are 29-16 at the friendly confines of Wrigley Field, but only 18-27 on the road. Their run differential is good, plus 55, and that is number one in the NL Central, number three in the National League. But they have committed only over 60 errors this year. They have committed the second most errors in the National League. It's been well documented. Their base running has been below average. They are making a lot of outs on the bases. A bit mystifying, considering how normally fundamentally sound Joe Maddon teams have been.
True.
With Tampa Bay and with Chicago. Not something they had to worry about during their championship season in 2016. So the whole NL Central is a bit of a head-scratcher right now. The Cubs lead the way. They have the best nucleus of players in the division. But right now, there just isn't the separation. And they start the second half with a nice homestand, nine straight, Pirates, Reds, and Padres. And then they go to San Francisco for three, Milwaukee for three, St. Louis for three. So nine at home, nine on the road. Then they come back home to take on Milwaukee. So other than the Giants, it's not really an easy stretch to start the second half as they try to find their footing right now in this National League Central that is, it's competitive, but I don't know if it's a good competitive right now. It is an average division with average teams right now, but there's a lot of average in the National League. As of a few days ago, there were nine teams within four games over 500 and three under 500. So that's kind of the baseline for teams in the National League.
No kidding. it's weird. It's been one of those years, and I'm curious to see how all this plays out when it comes to the trade deadline here in 20 days, how all that's going to impact things. The fact that there's one trade deadline, there's no non-waiver trade deadline. It's going to be really interesting to see what things look like. It's going to be different this year.
I'm not sure I like the fact you can't make a trade after August 1st. We used to have the waiver deadline of August 31st, but that is gone. So everything has to be done by July 31st. That might lead to more activity for depth in your organization, tinkering with your 25-man roster. This might be a good thing. I hope so. The trade deadline and just the offseason in general is boring compared to what they do in the NBA, that's for sure, and that's a story for another day. Hey, one other note as we start to wrap things up. On the South Bend Cubs, who lost to Kane County 3-2 last night, earlier in the program we were talking about prospects in the Cubs system and who might be on the move. MLB Pipeline has 20-year-old left-hander Braylon Marquez as the number three Cubs prospect. His last seven starts, 30 and a third innings, 37 hits, 27 runs. 21 of those runs are earned. He has walked 20 and struck out 31. So the 20-year-old has amazing stuff. Upper 90s fastball. I call it a wipeout slider, developing changeup. But he's getting hit a little bit more than you expected right now. And for the year, the ERA is 4.48 through 16 and a third innings. The whip is 1.62. You want to be around 1.20. And right now, that number is pretty high. So a guy with an enormous amount of talent right now trying to figure it out in the Midwest League as a 20-year-old. So do those numbers affect the Cubs and something they may want to do at the deadline? We'll have to see. Sports Beat tonight brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Eddy Street Commons at Notre Dame, hosting Coffee and Cars this Saturday, July 13th from 9 to 1. Lechleitner Door Sales and Service at Lechleitner. They open all the right doors. And the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Thanks, Sean. Always a pleasure. We will try it again tomorrow, and we'll be listening for Leprechaun Lunch at noon tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you tomorrow night.
He's Sean. I'm Darren. Brendan King has the pregame show for South Bend Cubs baseball next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.